Welcome to Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. Each week, we explore down and dirty ways to stop awfulizing, catastrophizing, going down the rabbit hole, and moving through all the craziness that is happening right now. We're here to create a community of like-minded people as we give you tips, tricks, and techniques for keeping sane in an unhinged world. And now, here are your hosts, Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg.
Hey, everybody. This is Scott Grossberg, one of your co-hosts for the podcast, Keeping Your Shit Together in a Stressed World. And I'm here with my co-host, Michelle Post. Hey, Michelle, happy pre-Halloween.
Hi, Scott. Happy pre-Halloween. Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, we've all had our Halloweekend.
Halloweekend.
I know you got some other stuff to talk about, but I will tell you, I've got one more night, actually tomorrow night, Halloween at the Magic Castle here in Hollywood. And what a crazy freaking weekend. What costumes. It's just been, I mean, imagine Halloween, pair it with Hollywood. You can imagine.
I can imagine. I have been several times to the Magic Castle during Halloween or on Halloween, and it is a wild, wonderful experience if anybody's lucky enough to go.
And I got to tell you, it's hilarious. Just one little quick add-in. I wasn't going to talk about it, but in light of you just saying that, there are dress codes for the costumes, which are required. You have to wear actually Halloween costumes to the castle for Halloween.
Oh, yes.
But one of the rules is no inappropriate nudity.
And is that sort of like porn? I will know it when I see it, but I don't know how to define it.
I don't know. But everybody's been very tasteful. I'll give them that. But
it's just, okay.
You know, as a performer, you know, you go through, you get the rules and whatever else. And it's like, okay, in a public place, what is appropriate?
What is appropriate nudity?
So I found out the reason behind it, by the way. Apparently somebody last year showed up, a gentleman showed up in a diaper, and that was it.
But if your costume is a baby, that's a very appropriate level of nudity.
I don't believe that it was a tight-fitting diaper.
Okay.
Very all right.
Fascinating.
Moving on. What
do
you got?
Actually, you know, I was going to talk about one thing, but you're reminding me of since Halloween is tomorrow, I think maybe I want to share a funny Halloween story about COVID, because now it's a different era, right? So I wanted to ask you, do you celebrate Halloween at your home, and do you give out candy, or do you go with the grand Bat Babies Halloween trick-or-treating elsewhere? Like, what's your norm when you're not at the castle?
I'm going to answer this with a we, because we, my wife and I, do both. So it's kind of a combination. The grand Bat Babies will come here, do trick-or-treating. We do hand out candy. We do. I mean, we've got the front of the house decorated, and I've got my little Halloween t-shirt that I wear. But yeah, we did. So the answer is we do both, but one of us stays home if one of us goes out.
Got it. Okay. So the reason why I bring this up is Halloween in Los Angeles or Florida has been really fascinating. There have been times when I've lived in neighborhoods with lots of kids and given out candy, and there have been times when I've had candy to give out and no one comes to the home. You know, it just depends on the neighborhood. But during COVID, you know, of course, it was really weird. I had candy one year and no one came to the home, of course. And then somehow, this is my funny telling a joke on myself. Somehow last year, Halloween skipped us. Like, when you work in death and dying and mental health, or my partner works in healthcare and nursing, your schedule is your schedule. And it doesn't matter when holidays are. Like, you're either working or you're not working. And there's, you know, many holidays that you don't pay attention to. So somehow we got through last year without getting any candy. And Brian was on call, and he was up all night the 30th to the 31st on a case. So he was sleeping, which meant that our home was kind of a little bit shut down, but the front porch light was on. And I got up, I don't know why I was up at odd hours, but I got up to make dinner for us before he woke up, and I had the lights on, and suddenly the front doorbell rings and I realize it's Halloween and I've got nothing to give out. And I'm in the kitchen cooking, so the lights are on and you can see into the house.
It's right. Like, so there's no hiding.
There's not really any hiding, but the blinds were partially closed, so there was a little bit of hiding. Well, anyway, I'm like searching through my pantry. Do I have granola bars? Do I have raisins? Do I have fruit or apples? Do I have anything that I could possibly give out to the trick-or-treaters? Because all of a sudden I heard bang, 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 bang on the front door. Because also our doorbell, for whatever reason, is finicky and doesn't always work. But bang, bang, bang on the door. I'm cooking kitchen and I'm like, why is there banging on the door? And suddenly I see these little people above the frosted glass. I see these. So I'm searching around the house. And when I realize I've got nothing, I hid.
And then Michelle, this is where you hand out money.
I didn't have any cash. We don't keep cash in the house. I think I had a 20 somewhere, but I don't even think I had cash.
Not a 20. I was thinking more like dollar bills.
No, I don't have dollar bills. We don't frequent strip joints here, so I don't usually have cash. Nor do I carry cash. I'm notorious for not having cash on me. I'm getting better. Brian's teaching me. But anyway, so I did. And then as soon as they left, I turned all the lights out and I proceeded to cook dinner in the dark.
Oh, seriously.
Yes. So this year, I am prepared. I will never do that again. I mean, you got to remember, last year was like the first year we had had trick-or-treaters in 2 years. I think 2021. So 2022, like, there's not a lot of kids in the neighborhood.
Got it. Sure.
Blah, blah, blah. So 2022 was the first year that kids were trick-or-treating in our neighborhood. And I hid and picked it. I'm so ashamed. Anyway.
Well, it would have been your dirty little secret. Now the whole world knows.
Well, now the whole world knows. But I just want you to know, if this has ever happened to you, you're not alone. I'm not afraid to bare my soul so others feel less alone in the world. But we are prepared. I have a full bowl of candy ready to go, and the
so you of course picked the year to stock up on candy, where candy now chocolate is the most expensive it's ever been.
Oh, is it really? Is that why it's so pricey?
Yeah.
Well, because I don't really ever buy it.
Yeah, because of the storm and weather changes, all the chocolate has become dramatically hard to get, and so it's like fuel prices, right? It got passed on.
Wow. Well, yep. And our candy is all chocolate. And Brian did also, this was another thing. Since Brian's been on call this week, I didn't even realize he got the candy. And I ordered candy that's supposed to arrive today in time, or I was going to go up to the store. But then I saw he had a whole bowl of candy. So now we probably have two big bowls of candy.
And that's okay. Get so like one trick. What you don't give out, you consume. So before we jump into our show today, I do want to thank all of our listeners. We're at over 9,600 plays now, which is kind of cool considering how we put the show together and that this is our passion. It's not something we put, all this marketing stuff into. And just a quick reminder to listeners, please share this, like this, subscribe to it, so that we can keep this going. And it's kind of affirmation back to Michelle and I that we're touching people. So thank you. All right. Shall we jump in today?
We should.
Or do you have something else you want to share?
No, the only thing I would share is my twist on Halloween is my favorite holiday of the year is actually Dia de los Muertos. So Day of the Dead. As a grief and loss counselor, I love Day of the Dead, building the ofrendas, the altars and the celebrations around. So if any of you get a chance to go to a Day of the Dead celebration where you are, I just highly recommend it. It's a beautiful cultural experience.
Cool. Well, mm-hmm. Today, obviously, we're pre-Halloween. Mm-hmm. And, when we talk about the different shows bantered about, and I've always loved the concept of don't look back, your past will be gaining on you. Mm-hmm. And I had joked with you before about, the little message that's in your side view mirror that says objects in the mirror are bigger than they appear.
Yes.
And I've always likened that anecdotally to what haunts you, right?
Yes.
What's chasing you? And I've got all these cute little sayings given what I do. You know, it's like if you can't get rid of your skeletons, at least teach them to dance. and the fun part here is this is your world, right? Because I, as a coach, take people where they are and move them forward. I don't usually address what's haunting them. I mean, we certainly, there's an overlap between what you and I do. There's no doubt about that. But I'm not a therapist. And so, you know, I thought it'd be fun just to really kind of jump in and maybe we talk a wide range of everything from, you know, childhood or even, you know, genealogy, that trauma that gets passed down, that epigenerational construct. It's been interesting at the castle because I've talked about my great grandmother, for example, who, in the context of what I'm doing at the castle, she would dress. She's from Romania, dressed in full Romanian garb, and did, you know, fortune telling and things like that.
Oh wow, I didn't know
but,
that.
But you know, that's the cool stuff you hear about. Yeah. I also grew up though with the stories of these, you know, the pogroms and the, you know, the stuff that Fiddler on the Roof was based on, and you know, World War II and the Depression, and you know, I know that sounds deep and heavy, but that haunts you as a kid, right?
Yes, it does.
Because even though you don't experience it, you hear about the trauma from your family members, and that gets passed down, I'm pretty sure. And I am starting, in fact, to see some of that played out with the global conflicts that are taking on now, where, you know, there's a rise in anti-Semitism, and to a large degree, the younger generation, I can say that because I'm old, the younger generation has not experienced war, and they have not experienced, and they have in the U.S., yes, and they have not experienced anti-Semitism of the like that's being reported now. And so nobody has anything to anchor around other than going back to these stories they've heard about. And then it becomes hand-wringing. And I know that that's a big topic, but I'm going to presume that even, you know, past lost loves, right? The death of a family member, losing money, all these triggers that you would see in everyday life, they all come to the forefront in times of crisis, right?
Ooh, they do. Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of, you know, I approach things from a bigger macro level. I know that perhaps you approach them from a micro level. I don't know. What do you think about the what haunts you concept?
Both is a good concept to have. We have existential crisis that sometimes you want to talk about and process through and figure out how to move forward and not become reclusive shut-ins in our home, avoiding big picture issues like what's going on in the world and the economy and around us and in society. And then we also have internal, personal, family of origin, historical battles that affect our present that are really coming back from the past. They're really about the past. You know, so we've been, like, for example, something that comes up in therapy with couples is if one person has been cheated on in the past by a past lover or a past partner, the propensity to be overprotective of oneself and hyper vigilant and paranoid can affect the current relationship in a detrimental way, you know, because it's frustrating to be a partner who is trustworthy and loyal and to be doubted on the regular. You know, it causes you to feel not secure about yourself, right? So it creates problems in the present when it's really about a past issue. Or I have survivors of childhood sexual or physical abuse who have trauma responses in the present day, relationships with friends, coworkers. Like if you're a past survivor of childhood abuse and your boss yells at you or even just calmly disciplines you, it can feel like you are being yelled at and you become paranoid, frozen, and unable to assert yourself and hold good boundaries and ask important questions to get the clarity that you need to correct the behavior so that you're functioning in the way your boss needs because you're frozen from your past trauma. So
let's talk about that for a minute, because I've heard this from others, including you, but from others for quite a long time. And in the realm of what I do, I have a saying that I like to repeat, and that's if all you have is a hammer, everything starts looking like a nail.
Yes.
And listening to you talk about this vivid remembering, right?
Uh-huh.
Of a past trauma. What do you do? So let's keep it in the vein of a pre-Halloween show, because that's what we're doing today. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've had bad experience with zombies in the past,
right?
How do you stop seeing everything as a zombie?
It's rough, right? You're going to be paranoid. Some of it is healthy paranoid. So like a current example might be you see a lot of mass shootings in the news in the United States, some, you know, abroad. Right. And people become afraid to go to Target or Walmart or the grocery store or the movie theater. They become afraid that, am I going to be the next victim? So usually what I try to do with something like that, you have zombies from the past, is look at the catastrophic thinking. What part of it is realistic? And do you need to be protective? Do you need to take a self-defense course?
So how, I'm trying to think back, I'm probably trying in vain at this point, to think back to a time where catastrophic thinking has kicked in. I don't really recall that, but I can imagine right now being in a situation where, let's just say something happens, whatever the trigger is, and this catastrophic thinking clicks in. And you've just said, and we've said it before on the show, right? Is it real?
Is it real? That's one of the things. Is it real?
How do we help a listener who's gone dark and twisty understand that's not real?
Right.
How do we actually help them make that at least break, to at least recognize, I think something's off here?
Right. So one size fits all is really challenging, but I'm going to try to tell you the one size fits all piece, which is statistically, how likely is this fear going to happen? Okay. So in general, you have a fear that, I don't know, you're fired and you'll never get a job again, that you're going to go out in public and be a victim of a mass shooting, that an earthquake's going to happen and your house is destroyed. You know, how statistically likely of all the humans living in earthquake areas have lost their homes and never been able to rebuild and never been able, and died? Like, statistically, how common is it? So you need the statistics on your side. Now, the reason why one size doesn't fit all is when you have been a survivor of these statistically rare situations, mass shooting, death of a child, et cetera, it's real, or you've been the person that has the reaction to the medical treatment that is so rare.
Right.
Okay. It's really hard to use that as a combating tool, because if you've been the victim of something rare before, then you already have the fear that it's possible. And it'll
right. So at that point, again, using my anecdote or my metaphor, at that point, you not only needed a hammer, you went out after the thing and you hoarded the hammers.
You hoarded the hammers. Yes. And so, treatment for that kind of thing is, it's processing of anxiety. It's combating the statistics and the catastrophic thinking. It's sometimes hypnosis, sometimes it's EMDR or IEMT. It's sometimes it's journaling. It's being a part of a support group. Like, you really have to work a lot at overcoming your fear of the statistic when you have been the statistic. Okay. But that's a smaller subsection of group. Most people who have catastrophic thinking are worried about stuff that's never actually happened to them.
Well, exactly.
And probably never will.
And so, unfortunately, I have some friends and family members who, in the midst of the COVID shutdown, right? That, you know, the survivalists, the ones who honest to God believed we were going to have a zombie apocalypse.
Right.
And, you know, I'm looking at it saying, we're in my reality, we're not going to have a zombie apocalypse. That's not what's happening. Right. And the more I would say we're not going to have a zombie apocalypse. I'm cool, guys. I don't need to do all this. I don't need this gigantic locker of supplies. And right. And so it just seemed to entrench the people. And so one of the things that I wanted to make sure that we talked about today about your past haunting you is don't you find that some people, for lack of a better way to put it, I'm probably being very naive in my use of language from a psychological standpoint, but don't you feel that some people, God, they will defend their catastrophic thinking?
Yes.
And the more contra or contra facts are presented to them, the more they dig in.
Right.
So what do you do, presuming somebody wants help with that, right? Because if they don't want help, there's nothing you and I can do with it.
Nor do I want to.
Somebody says, the world is coming to an end. We're going to have a zombie apocalypse.
Right.
We just got done with a full moon. Look what's happening in the Middle East. Tomorrow is Halloween. The world comes to an end. Let's just say they say that.
Right.
What would be one of the first things you would do in a therapy session?
Well, I would ask them, I don't think we talked about it in a previous episode. When have you predicted terrible outcomes in the past that have not come true yet? When have you thought the world was going to end? So let's take the world was going to end. When have you thought the world was going to end and it didn't actually end? And in my own history, I can say the Y2K crisis.
I forgot about that one. That's right. Yeah.
12/12/12, 2012, when the Mayan calendar is going to go crazy and we're all going to die. When else? I mean, if you've been in the Christian faith, there's like all kinds of numbers. There were like people who invested billboards and their entire savings saying the end of the world was going to happen, and it didn't happen. Yeah. And what they ended up doing was losing everything themselves because they had so invested in this is going to be the end of the world. So there are personal, and usually there's a family history of when did you think the world was going to end, and you or your family members survived it and got your way through it. And if so, can we pull from that resilience and recognize that statistically, most of what we worry about never will come true. And in the rare percentage of time it comes through, most people report that they handled it better than they thought that they could and they survived it. It's not true for everybody, but it is true for most people. And so why not you? Do you believe in your ability to handle difficult things? And if you want to take some action and make sure you have your earthquake preparedness kit, or you want to invest in your bomb shelter, and you want to learn survivalist skills and learn how to live off the land, and you want to start learning how to garden, and you want to put some of these things in place for the end of the world, like, as long as you're not hurting yourself or other people, go for it, right? Take the action you need to take. Do you need to carry pepper spray? Carry pepper spray. You need to carry it. Do what you need to do to help yourself feel like you can take care of yourself, and then let go of the fear.
Well,
present.
And this kind of brings me to, you've listeners have heard me talk about Alan Watts before. I just love the man's approach to life, let alone to Zen Buddhism, and you know how he made it popular here in the West. But one of the things that he said, which also led to our show today, was that whenever you meet a ghost, don't run away. right? You literally turn and face it, because if you run away, according to Alan Watts, the ghost will chase you and take over your spirit. Whereas if you turn and face the ghost, again, we're being metaphorical here. When you turn and face the ghost, it runs out of its own substance and disappears.
Yes.
And I think that's a really great way of looking at what haunts us in everyday life.
Yes.
And we've all got it, right? I'm the kid that used to hide under the bed. I remember all that. I was afraid of the dark.
Yes.
And the interesting thing is, I don't remember when I stopped being afraid of the dark, but I did. I remember one day, I do remember making the decision. I said, I don't want to do this anymore. I used to have to sleep with a light on in the hallway, not in my bedroom, but a light on in the hallway just so I could see. But I firmly believed that there were monsters out there.
Yeah.
And then there weren't. It's really interesting. It's really interesting to me, because I wonder how other people, right? I've got my monsters. You've got your monsters.
Right.
Go ahead.
You said you personally remember making a decision that you didn't want to live.
I certainly remember being afraid.
Uh-huh.
I also remember not wanting to feel like that anymore. I do distinctly remember that. And I've got a vague memory, a really vague one of we'll call it a test.
Yes.
Of one day, one night actually, turning the light off. Because I wanted to almost test it and prove that there was nothing to be afraid of. There was no monster there. Right. I can go flip the bedroom light on. It was like one of those things where it's like I had a fail safe.
Right.
That said, I got to tell you, yesterday, getting ready to go out to the castle, go out to my car. And you guys have heard this story before of when I used to capture, insects and take them outside all the time. That's the way I was raised. Until this one frickin' spider that I was putting a glass down on top of jumped.
Yes.
Right? Honest to God, I'm going out to my car yesterday, and the Hollywood prop crew must have gone out, because there was a very ambitious spider that had built a web literally between our two cars.
Wow.
Got all that, went over to my side door, and there's a frickin' spider sitting on my door.
Oh, man.
And all I was going to do was go flick it.
Yes.
Get it off my car, get it onto the grass, let it go live its life. It fucking jumped.
Jumped again?
It jumped. And I was instantly thrown back to the zombie apocalypse of a kid. Now, I caught myself. It was instantaneous. And I say this because it's kind of like turning the lights off. It was very interesting, because I caught myself watching the spider jump and realizing I had previously told myself, I don't have to think like that anymore.
Right.
I don't have to be afraid. It's a freaking spider that jumped.
Yes.
And it actually didn't even jump at me. The spider in the bathroom didn't jump at me either, by the way. It jumped away. And yet I had internalized this, saying, oh my God, I'm at risk. It's a threat.
Yeah.
And I just wonder how many times our thoughts jump out and it's not a rational reaction that we have. And so we let it haunt us.
Right. Well, you brought up Alan Watts earlier. And when I was preparing for today's show, I was looking at quotes about the past. And there's another quote that I was tempted to talk about. Now I am. I have realized that the past and the future are real illusions, that they exist in the present, which is what there is and all there is. So this reminds me of another tool: when your past is haunting you or gaining on you, do an assessment of your present. Are you safe right now? Are you okay right now? Is there anything dangerous around you in this exact moment? Can you do an assessment of your gratitude for what you have? Thich Nhat Hanh also talks about, like, do your lungs still work? Can you see through your eyes? Are you able to eat and swallow? Do your arms and legs work? Like just even doing an assessment of not the things going wrong with your body, but the things that your body is still capable of doing helps you refocus from your fears towards your gratitude and maximize what you currently have available to you right now. Do you have resources, friends? Like whatever your assessment is, assess your present moment and recognize what you've got to work with.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that wonderful what you've just said. I think the other thing, and I've certainly noticed this, is that I've even done it at times. I don't do it a lot. I don't believe, but you know, a lot of people, they don't even want to deal with the past. They push it away, lock it down, ignore it, right? It's the whole ostrich approach, right? You dig your head in the sand and you don't pull it out until someone bites you in the butt. And I think I'm speaking for both of us that one of the things that we are urging listeners to do is to get to that place where they can think about the past. Yes. And it not immediately bring up all the resentment, the anger, the fear, all of these debilitating, disempowering thoughts, but not ignore it. That it's like, this is my past. We've all hurt. We've all been through grief. It'll happen again. It's part of life. Right. And the future is going to have all of that too. And it's going to have all the upside. And it's not that we're asking you to not have the emotion, but don't freaking ignore what's haunting you, because if you ignore the zombies, then you won't be ready when the zombies come.
Right. Or you will see zombies everywhere you look when they're not there, which is my other example that I want to share, which is what is in the room haunting you may not actually be what's in the room with you, but something from your past. So,
that's a great one. Say that again, because that's really good.
So what's in the room haunting you may not actually be in the room at all, but is something from your past haunting you. Okay. So what I mean by that is the danger of ignoring your past and not working through it is you can project onto the present moment in a really negative way. And I'll give you an example. I worked with someone once, and going into this experience that I'm going to share as an example, there had been conflict between us, but I couldn't understand why. And I am a past explorer. So I had is this something about me? I had done my work and realized I can't figure it out. It's not coming from me. And then we did this exercise at work, and the person was able to say, we were doing this role play, and this person was able to say, you actually look like my sister. And I was like, oh, I do? Oh, yes. And you actually have mannerisms of my sister. And I said, I do. And she goes, yes. And I said, well, what's your relationship like with your sister? And she goes, I can't stand her. We haven't talked for 2 years.
Oh, there you go.
And I was like, holy hell, I have been doing therapy about this. I've been trying to figure out what I was doing to make this person mad at me, why we were having such conflict. And it was her past. It was her past that she was not willing to see until that moment. And then once she was able to see it, she was able to see me as a very different person, as a loving, compassionate coworker, not trying to undermine her or get in the way of. Now, likewise, my own hairdresser, she will tell me that I look like her sister and I have some mannerisms of her sister, but she's like, but you're so much more pleasant than my sister.
So, that's an interesting thing that you've brought up. Last night at the Magic Castle, one of the audience members after the show came up to me, and I won't go into what exactly he said, but he kept saying, you remind me of this actor, right? Yeah. And then he started treating me like it was this actor / character from this movie. And it was amazing, Michelle, because he was actually talking to me. He was in the freaking movie. It was like he was talking to this actor. What do you do when someone does this to you? So, here is a person who has transferred the problem with the sister because you look and act like her. You're recognizing that's happening. I know that didn't happen for you right away.
Took for a while.
But do you have any thoughts on how to disengage from that or to short circuit this misconnection?
Well, if I'm working with a client who has the insight, oh, I'm shutting down with my boss because they remind me of my mother, father, insert the blank, then one of the things that we will do is actively use their self-talk and coaching so that the next time they're in conflict with this person, they actually say in their head, this is not my mother, father, sister, brother, et cetera. This is Scott. And Scott is his own person. And I believe in our relationship to work this out. So they actively take that past connection and remind themselves, this is not that person. And this new person in front of me gets to have a new relationship with me. So if I'm working with the person, that's what I'll do. If I'm the person, like in the case of what happened to me at work, if I'm the person and I can't figure it out, honestly, I do my work. Who does this person remind me of? No one. Is this person bringing up past stuff for me? No, not really. I'm just confused and frustrated. Then I use a lot of self-compassion and patience. Just sooner or later, you'll get through this. It's okay. We don't understand it. Do your best to be an ethical human being and show up as yourself and hope they work through it. And, just, I don't know, use your higher power, pray about it, meditate about it, set an intention to form a new relationship with this person, set an intention that you will get through it, that you believe in yourself. So there are two different approaches. If you're the person being projected upon, or you're the one with awareness that you're projecting. And so that's
I'm going to give one more option because I certainly have been here in very high stakes situations.
Oh, good.
Particularly with judges. It's always a crapshoot, by the way, when you walk into a courtroom and you don't know what has happened with the judge. They're people too. But you don't know if you're going to have everything that's going wrong with this judge's personal life taken out on you,
right,
or on your client. And so I had to learn very quickly how to cut through that bullshit. And I'm being very brutally honest right now. And so I had a standard line that I love to use, particularly with one judge. We walked in one day and he started cussing. He just started freaking cussing. F this, F that, and F you, and F this. And it's like, right? we're beyond just friction.
Yeah, this is cantankerous. Uh-huh.
And so I learned very quickly using some covert hypnosis and NLP techniques. I just confronted it. And I invite listeners at the appropriate time. You don't do this all the time. But what I said to this judge was, have I done something to offend you?
Yes.
And that was enough of a pattern interrupt that the judge said, what the F are you talking about? And I said, well, you've literally every other word out of your mouth has been the F-bomb to me and to my client from the minute you took the bench.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he said, I F and talk like that to everybody. And he then went on to say some other things. I said, well, it's very uncomfortable for us because it feels like you're attacking us. Is that what you mean to do? And everything shifted in him. I think he actually caught himself at that point. He's got his own little ghosts that were haunting him or whatever.
Ghosts were haunting him.
And, to again, step into it and address the situation. I happen to be one of those people. I'll confront somebody. I'm not a non-confrontational guy. I'm not the one that backs away and says, maybe you'll grow out of this someday or go back on your meds or talk to somebody or whatever the situation happens to be. I just don't have that kind of time if you walk into a high pressure situation. And so for some, again, not all situations, but for some situations, literally in a polite, elegant, professional way, confronting the person saying, hey, it feels like there's a little friction. Maybe it's me, but have I done something to offend you? Or is something going on that I don't know about?
Yes.
Now, do not ask the question if you don't want the answer.
Correct.
Right. You might have done something.
That's right.
But you might also get the person on the other side that says, you remind me of my sister and I can't stand her.
Right.
Right. Or today, and I have had this happen actually a long time ago. Somebody had lost their child, right? Nothing's worse than the loss of a child. You remind me of my son, and today is his birthday.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And so you can see the transference.
Of course.
And you, again, remind everybody as we get near the end here, you're not a mind reader. And more importantly, when there are ghosts, there's no mind to read.
Yes.
And so we try to put all these intentions and motives and everything behind a ghost.
Yes.
When in fact there just isn't one.
I'm so glad you brought this up, because in the situation with the coworker, I did actually ask similarly, have I done something to offend you? I did use assertiveness first. And curiosity, and the person was just unaware.
Yeah.
And no, like the judge originally responded to you, no, what are you talking about? You didn't do anything. So sometimes it can work to be assertive, and other times it can't. There was one time at work where I was new to an organization and doing some consulting, and I just felt this intense rigidity from this person. Like, just every time they saw me, it felt like fire coming out of their eyes towards me, and I couldn't figure it out for the life of me. And so I asked them, I did the same thing, have I done something to offend you? And in this case, they said, yes, when you stopped by to see me the other day to say you were going to lunch with somebody, you asked me what I was doing for lunch, and I said, I'm enjoying my raspberries or something like that. And you said something like, oh, well, I love raspberries, instead of inviting me to lunch or something. And I looked at her and I said, I'm so sorry. These other people had invited me as a guest, and I didn't feel I was in a place to extend an offer when they were specifically inviting me. And I want you to know, I'm very sincere. I love raspberries. I have often had raspberries for lunch and felt like it was a wonderful lunch. It's one of my favorite things. It's tied to my childhood. And that was actually quite sincere. And so we were able to like do the repair work in the moment, but people can misunderstand you very easily, and you do need to do the repair work.
Yeah.
Right. So you brought up a really important fact. If you feel like you can be assertive and ask about the situation, that is one of the best things that you can do, is ask, have I done something to offend you? I'm uncomfortable, and it feels like I'm being attacked, or that you're mad at me. What's going on? And that can lead to resolution.
That's it. So this kind of leads me to the last thing I wanted to talk about today. And that is, sometimes with a ghost, you can bring it to life, right? It doesn't have to stay dead. And, they're not around anymore, but I loved the group Evanescence. And there's a song that they came out with called Bring Me to Life. And I just invite people to go listen to the lyrics of it. And it's stuff like Wake Me Up Inside, Call My Name and Save Me from the Dark. Every now and then, right? It's a ghost that actually isn't a ghost. And this is, again, very consistent with what we've been saying, and that's to step into this, and maybe you can help somebody else who feels dead inside, who feels confrontational, wake up again because they've been dreaming. So just kind of something to think about here at pre-Halloween. It kind of brings us to the end of our show today. Anything else you want to end on?
Hope this has been helpful to people, because it is reminding me of these skills that I try to hone myself to manage stress. So I hope other people can take away from it something good.
Wonderful. So everybody have a great Halloween. Next week, we are going to talk about gender roles and the movies. Should be a very, very interesting discussion, primarily because just coming out of my run in Hollywood, gender identity and magicians has been a big deal this whole run. And people have been asking, why aren't there more female magicians and things like that? So we're going to have a great discussion and I'm sure talk about some movies. With that, thank you all for listening. Have a safe and sane Halloween. I know they use it for 4th of July, but have a safe and sane Halloween as well. Yes. And with that, we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
You've reached the end of another episode of Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. If you like our show, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate our broadcast, and leave a review. The podcast is for general information only and not intended to be legal or mental health advice, nor the formation of a lawyer-client, nor therapist-patient relationship. Stay tuned for our next episode, and thank you for listening.